Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Eric, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. There you go.
I'm like a seal on command.
And I am happy because you and I have today's episode, I think, is going to be great. I think next week's episode is going to be great. They're going to have to be great because this is the first time we've planned this far ahead during no baseball season. And I'm looking forward to having something kind of a little less aimless to talk about.
That's true. I know we've already planned out next week. And we've exchanged several texts on it. And for the life of me, at this very moment, I don't remember what that is.
We'll talk about it because it's going to be good. It involves your favorite baseball movie. So I'll let you think about that over the break. You and I are going to be talking about our earliest baseball memories, specifically the first games we can remember attending. You've got a Dodgers rewind. We have 5 questions from Craig. We're going to do all of that after this message. So I don't know about you. And I know you have a very specific game that you're going to be talking about, but for the first literally decade of going to baseball games from the age of 4-ish to right around when I was a teenager, baseball games, it wasn't like I was following the Dodgers or really even following the current season. It was a much more atmospheric experience of Dodger dogs and candy and souvenirs and celebrating when a home run was hit and maybe I, you know, 2 or 3 players on the teams, I would kind of know their names because I'd hear them on the news or hear kind of adults talking about it, but it wasn't the same experience as following a baseball team.
Yeah, I was kind of the same in a little bit, except that I was like sort of indoctrinated into the Dodgers. Like my brothers, my uncles, they're all Dodger fans. Now, growing up, we had Dodgers and Angels games on TV, but obviously it wasn't like it was today. It was occasional games on TV, you know, and then there's NBC Game of the Week. So there's a lot more. You knew some of the national stars based on just that. So my thought on this was ideally it would be, what's the first baseball game you can remember? But that's not clear for everybody because I know the game in question. I know I've been to games before that. I have no idea what those games are. It morphs into like, what's your best baseball memory? So, just for the preamble to this, I would say 85 was the first year I started following full time. And I was like fully into the Dodgers by then. I was age 9. I watched like midway through 84, but like sort of loosely, you know, and I remember watching the World Series in 84. That's like the first World Series I can remember. So I know I've been to games before that, though. Like, I would say earliest at least was 6 and maybe 7, and those ages went to games. But like, it was also 2 hours away, and that seemed like an eternity, like back then when I was a kid. So it seemed like it might as well have been like another planet away. But I just remember there was one like relatively large family outing we had at a game once, and I was with my cousin. And when we were together, we like goofed around a lot. And we're maybe 6 or 7 at this point. And I'm pretty sure we spent almost the entire game making jokes about how somehow the Dodger Stadium toilet system was connected to second base. And every time a player would get to second base, the toilet would explode. And like we were just cracking ourselves up because we made the best joke in the history of the world. And I have no idea who the Dodgers played that day. I have no idea what year it was. But yeah, that's sort of, my earliest memory. But like, it's so vague. Like, I don't even know if it actually happened. So like, the specific stuff, I do know what happened. That's what we're going to sort of dig into today.
Yeah, so I have a very specific memory of going to a Dodger game when it would have been either it was probably 1991 season. Oh. I think there's a possibility it was 90, but like the end of 90, but I think it was more likely to be 91. And I remember, it's like flashes. I remember the parking lot, which is very funny and very on brand for a Dodger Stadium game. Mm-hmm. And I remember going with, they were friends of my parents, so they were my parents' age, and just not knowing people, but in general, just the excitement of a night baseball game. And just it's a very happy memory, even though I don't have a lot of specifics to it. And then do you want me to do my games first?
Yeah, I think you should do yours first. But just before that, I want to say we're going to put this in the notes, but I'd like the listeners to share their own first baseball memory, like the first game you could remember attending. It, like I said, doesn't have to be the very first game because you might not be able to remember that. Just the first one you can fully remember. So tweet at us or throw it in the comments of the post on True Blue LA. But yeah, looking forward to hearing from everyone on this.
So that's, I have four answers to this. The first one is vague game in 91. The second is the first, I have two series that I know I was at this particular series.
Wait, but before we get to the series, I want to ask, the vague one, do you remember, like, would this have been, like, summer because there was no school, that's why you went to a night game?
And not necessarily.
I see, okay. Because you were relatively close, right? Like, close enough to go to a game and not get home at like 2 a.m. or something.
Yeah, and it could have been a Friday game. The other reason why I'm not entirely sure. So the first series I know I attended is not a Dodger game. We were vacationing, and I know the exact week or two because I remember being in a hotel in the Grand Canyon for my, would have been 12th birthday, and getting Yoshi's World N64 video game, which came out in 1997. So this would have been 1998 at Bob, the inaugural season for the Diamondbacks. I didn't realize until I was looking back that that was the case.
Yep,
I thought it might have been in 99, but I know it wasn't. One, because of the video game, and two, because for whatever reason, I remember they were playing the Giants, and the only reason I remember they're playing the Giants is I was fascinated by the name JT Snow. I have no idea why the name JT Snow was so fascinating to me. So I believe that was looking at this April. It would have been the second series ever for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm pretty sure I attended. I'm pretty sure the Diamondbacks lost. So April 3rd or April 4th of 98. Would have been the games we went to. And maybe if my parents were listening to this, they'll clue me in and they remember something specific.
Maybe you like slick fielding first baseman, that was your thing.
I think it was just more like initials, and Snow was like, sure. That's kind of a weird last name.
Wait, was this, oh man, had Snow released Informer yet? Was Snow fresh in your mind?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So moving on, the first Dodgers series I remember attending was not a regular season game. It was a two-game exhibition series where the Yankees visited Dodger Stadium. And this is specific. One, I'm pretty sure the first game I ever attended at the field level. And two, about four seats down from my family was a drunk guy who's the best... insult he could muster was Jeter's a Peter, which he mustered about every 5 minutes. He would just kind of mutter to himself, Jeter's a Peter, and laugh to himself. And that has stuck in both my brother and I's memory for a very long time.
So when you mentioned exhibition series, like I didn't know which one it was gonna be, but I figured it had to be there was like a few years in the early Fox ownership where they ditched the freeway series for a couple of years. And then everyone's like, hey, why are you doing that? This is not cool. And I'm pretty sure this had to fall in that range, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first game I can attest to being in attendance was May 22nd, 1999. And I give you a hint, before we went on air, Eric, that to look up this game, I had to Google Dodger Stadium rare feats.
So the things I thought of were Chan Ho Park and Fernando Tatis, but the anniversary for that was this week because people were tweeting about it. So it's not that. And I thought maybe it was a triple play, but it's not that. But May 22nd, 99, for the life of me, I can't really think of what it would be.
I'll give you one more hint. The visiting team was the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh.
And that is a big hint.
McGuire hitting it out of the stadium?
That's it.
Wow.
And I don't, because I didn't, again, I wasn't quite, certainly, like, I was a baseball appreciator. I appreciated going to a baseball game, but I wasn't a baseball fan. Certainly not a true Dodgers fan at that point. So I didn't understand why. It's a home run. Of course it left the park. That's what home runs are. But my parents do remember that and do remember how special it was and how big of a home run it was. So they, as I became a baseball fan and a Dodgers fan, they reminded me of that. We were at that game. So
I like how he and Sosa like tapered off in 99. Like he only had 65 home runs and Sosa had 63. And that was a down year. Just for sake of completeness, Informer came out in 1992. I am old. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I was six, so
right,
not at the top of memory.
You weren't first in line to get the snow single at the time. I guess CDs. It would be CD at that point, but
and yeah. So and then it was really from about 2001 ish through 2004 that I started, because my family largely is more of in that appreciating the atmospheric case. That's largely changed because of my brother and I becoming such big sports fans. But, you know, we would watch the Pacers games when they were in the playoffs. We'd watch March Madness. We'd watch the Super Bowl. But we didn't really, no one really followed, certainly professional sports. I think my parents were both kind of a little more interested in Purdue Athletics. God bless them. But really, over that series, my brother and I became big sports fans, and it was the 2003 offseason and the 2004 trade deadline when they got Steve Finley and were maybe going to get Randy Johnson, that I remember kind of realizing like how engaged I had become over the last year and a half to be a sports fan, which I found kind of odd because I was sort of a nominal nerd and geek up until that point, and oh, nerds don't do this. And then you figure out that, no, a bunch of nerds do.
Yeah, but that's right, like right on time for that sort of to take hold. So when you're like, and your parents especially following Purdue, this is like, for you at least, in that it's like prime Drew Brees years, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
And so nice. I was a loosely followed UCLA because it's where my mom was working. So I had an affinity for UCLA, but I refused to call myself a UCLA fan unless I actually attended there. So I eventually did get to do that for the Ben Howland years, but ain't been much to write home about being a Bruin fan since then, unless you're really in the water polo.
In the 90s, there was a period where I think UCLA beat USC like 8 straight years or something ridiculous, or it was something bad. Like it was, and I just remember being really down, and then like, oh, they hired Pete Carroll. Why are they hiring this retread? Whatever. Anyway, so that's your game. Nice.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Did the Dodgers win that game or no?
They did, 10-7.
Nice, slug fest.
So what's your game?
All right, so mine. I swear, I wish I still, I mean, there's no way they'd fit, obviously, but I wish I still had these. But it was Sock Day at Dodger Stadium, September 7th, 1985. I went with both of my brothers, Greg and Kelly. It was just the three of us. And I remember we went to Tommy's beforehand to eat and then, like, drove to the stadium. And I don't like chili on hamburgers, so I've never been a big Tommy's person, but like I was 9, I didn't know any better or anything at the time. So like whatever. And plus I wasn't driving. And I don't think I even had an opinion on Tommy's at that point. I just, hey, I'm going with my brothers. This is cool. So, we ate the food there, and my brother Greg, I think took a Coke can, from Tommy's, was like either, I forget, I don't know if he was drinking it in the car or if he had it in like a bag in the car, and then he was like drinking it in the parking lot at Dodger Stadium. Once we got there, like walking to the stadium. And I just remember too, like the parking lot at Dodger Stadium when you're little, like it's the biggest thing in the world. And like you park like, mm-hmm. at times we had parked because like my dad was always like this, and my brother sort of inherited it where you have to be the first one out. You got to have a plan. You got to, you know, and so they try to park like far away, but it's like easier to get out of. So there's a lot of like walking to get there. And when you're little, it's like, oh, this is, I can't even see the stadium from here. This is crazy. But anyway, so as we're walking to the stadium, I guess there was a bee on the Coke can, and my brother went to take a drink and got stung on the lip by a bee. And I was laughing so hard, and like, it was really funny. He wasn't allergic or anything, so no big deal. I was looking this up. This is a Saturday day game. I'm pretty sure it was the NBC game of the week. The night before was, I wish I would have went to this game because it was sweet. It was Fernando Valenzuela, like, you know, pretty, I mean, not 81, but like peak, like pretty still elite Fernando Valenzuela against Dwight Gooden at the peak of his powers. And they battled, it was a 13-inning game. It was scoreless until the 13th. Dwight Gooden went 9 scoreless innings, 10 strikeouts. Fernando went 11 scoreless. And so he was followed by Tom Niedenfuhr, who pitched 2 innings, and then he gave up a ground rule double, a 2-run ground rule double to Darryl Strawberry in the 13th, and the Dodgers lost 2-0. So obviously, like 1985, Tom Niedenfuhr, known for giving up the 2 back-to-back home runs, Game 5, Game 6, to lose the walk-off to Ozzie Smith, who had never homered left-handed in St. Louis, and then the 3-run shot to Jack Clark in a game where Niedenfuhr was in the game for so long that he actually struck Jack Clark out when he first came in the game. So just closers were used different back then. But so I was looking at this, like, his September is nuts. Like, that season was like I think they started a little late. Plus, in like August at some point, there was a labor strike in baseball, but it was like a 2-day labor strike. So I think they tacked on a few doubleheaders in September to like make up those games. And so as a result, like the Dodgers, the season didn't end until October 6th, which is pretty late. And the Dodgers end up playing 36 days in quote unquote September. In 36 days, not 36 games, but Niedenfuhr pitched 17 times in 36 days, like in the final month. So he was gassed, man. I looked up his numbers on Fangraphs because you could get the peripheral stuff. So before September, 185 ERA, 161 FIP. His strikeout rate was like 27%. He had three blown saves before September. In September, he had 3 blown saves alone, and he lost 4 other games. He had a 570 ERA, a 429 FIP. His strikeout rate plummeted to 18%. So this loss on Friday, he would end up like, I think he like blew a save his next 2 times out. And like, I just remember the 2 October things that, man, it was like a month long preview of what was going to happen in October. And nobody really realized it at the time. But back to the Saturday game. The Dodgers led 6-4 going into the 8th. Niedenfuhr pitched again, right after, you know, pitching 2 innings the night before. He pitched 2 innings again on Saturday. He allowed a run in the 8th and a run in the 9th. A Strawberry solo home run in the 9th got him to tie it. But then in the 9th, Franklin Stubbs hit a one-out single. Jose Gonzalez, he pinch ran and stole second. That was his second major league game and his first steal. And then Ken Lander was intentionally walked. He was a lefty, and they had a righty pitcher on the mound to face Mike Marshall, and he singled home Gonzalez, and the Dodgers won in walk-off fashion. And so, like, you know, it was a pretty exciting game. I obviously wasn't paying attention to probably all the details, like, not, you know, I didn't really know a ton about the players at the time, a little bit because I was collecting baseball cards, but not, like, I wasn't that aware of Jose Gonzalez at the time. I just knew he was fast. But it was cool that he scored the winning run. But so I was looking at, so this is September, so expanded rosters. In the Sunday series finale between the Dodgers and Mets, 2 Dodgers made their major league debut. Both were outfielders. They both pinch hit on that Sunday game. Can you name them?
I'm going to try to answer that question, or maybe not. Maybe I might not do that. I'll explain why after this.
We're going to get an explicit tag.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Which two players made their major league debut as Dodgers in this series, that you remember attending? So I have a confession, Eric. You already know the confession. I cheated. So I looked at this question and I went, normally, even when you give me hard questions, there's like an inlet. I have some way to figure it out, or like I to have heard of the name or to be able to kind of guess the game name. So I'm like, okay, 85 debut. This entirely possible. These are two very relevant players on the 88 World Series team. So I'm like, and then I'm like, didn't Oral debut a little earlier than that? And I'm like kind of debating my mind. And you gave me a hint afterwards that they were outfielders. And I'm like, outfielders. So I'm like, I know Alfredo Griffin, but I knew, and I'm proud of this, that I'm like, he came from the A's. I know that. Yeah, so like, nice. I know he wasn't debuted there. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to bring up the 88 roster and start looking at the outfielders. And I'm like, maybe it's this guy, and click, and know that his debut was 81 or whatever. So then I just caved. Look at the 85 roster. So I believe the answers are Jose Gonzalez. No.
Well, no. I just told you he was in his second major league game in that Saturday game.
Oh, okay. And then Stu Peterson is the other. You got that?
Jock's dad.
So I'm not going to say it on the air because I certainly don't swear, but I did send you a very crudely worded text message once I figured out the names you were expecting me to guess.
Well, so in fairness to me, I thought there was relevance, mostly because one of the names I was certain that we had done a Dodgers Rewind on before, and I looked it up, and oh wait, we haven't. So like, but like, I was trying to remember how I brought him up because I thought for sure I would have brought him up at some point. But the other one was Ralph Bryant. So he was like, there was a lot of Dodgers prospects in the 80s who were like put up big numbers in Albuquerque, and then they flamed out because nobody realized like, park factors and stuff like that, or at least the public didn't. But his big year was like in Double A San Antonio in 84, and he had a pretty good year in 85, but nothing like that Double A year. But anyway, he ended up later, he hit 249 homers in like 8 years in Japan, just absolutely killed it over there. So that was like his sort of baseball calling. Stu Peterson only had 5 plate appearances that September with the Dodgers. He played 8 games. He was 0-for-4, but he did have a sacrifice fly, so he drove in a major league run. And he also he had a son who has played a long time for the Dodgers, so good for him. I will say this. When I interviewed John Shoemaker in spring training 2019, he managed both Stu and Jock Peterson in the Dodgers minors because he's been around forever. So I asked him about both. And this didn't make the story, but I still have it in my notes, so I'm going to share this. This is his John Shoemaker story from Stu Peterson in 1982. He said, I saw him for a whole season in 1982. He was hitting .344, trying to beat Ty Gainey for the batting title. He was in the clubhouse in Daytona Beach. I believe this was at Vero Beach that year. He's got the Art of Hitting book by Ted Williams stuffed down his pants. He's looking in the mirror, trying to get that swing right, trying to better himself from a .344 hitter. That told me this guy would do everything he could to be a good ball player, and I feel like that's what Jock does too. So I thought that was a cool quote. And then just as a sort of addendum to this, Stu Peterson ended up hitting 336 that year. It was 1982. Ty Gainey, he was an outfielder for the Daytona Peach in the Astros system. He hit 341, so Gainey ended up winning the batting title, but it was close, and I thought that was a neat little story to that.
I'm excited for Dodgers Rewind.
Yeah, so now if I bring up a trivia question later that has this person, I'll say, hey, we did do a Dodgers Rewind. Uh-huh. So Bobby Castillo, the reason I brought him up is because I was going just randomly. I picked out an old, like, I believe it was 1985 Fleer update. I wanted to see what the Dodgers were in there. And Bobby Castillo was one of the cards. And then I happened to look. I was also looking at these old, I'll get to the baseball cards in a minute. But that's how I sort of stumbled across Bobby Castillo for this week. So his sort of claim to fame, he pitched for the Dodgers for a little bit, but his claim to fame was that he taught Fernando Valenzuela the screwball. So, like, that's a pretty big thing. Not to discount, like, what Bobby Castillo actually did, because he had his own, you know, career too. But there, like, it's kind of legendary, like, how it's all interconnected. It's kind of like the scouting trip that, like, Logan White took to Mexico to go, like, sign Puig. Then they, like, found Urias on the same trip. You know, that sort of, like, level of talent, even though, obviously, like, Bobby Castillo isn't Fernando, but it's still, like, kind of funny how it turns out this way. So Castillo, he's an L.A. kid, like, born and raised. Went to Lincoln High, LA Valley College. He gets drafted by the Royals in 74. He ends up getting, like, cut in 76. So he's, like, out of organized baseball. He goes, and he was playing in a semi-pro league. I'm going to read this from the LA Times. This is from Bob Castillo. He actually passed away in 2014. This is from his obituary in the LA Times. Cut by the Royals, the right-hander was pitching in a semi-pro game in Boyle Heights in 1976. When he had the very good fortune of striking out Mike Brito on a screwball. The lives of Castillo, Brito, and eventually Valenzuela and the Dodgers would never be the same. Brito, a former Mexican League player, turned scout, signed Castillo to pitch in the Mexican League, and in a short time, Dodgers general manager Al Campana signed Brito as a scout and Castillo to pitch. That led Brito to signing Valenzuela out of the Mexican League to the Dodgers. So, like imagine if... Bobby Castillo hadn't struck out Mike Brito on this awesome screwball. You, like, probably, who knows what would have happened, but that's kind of funny how that sort of happened. So Castillo was with the Dodgers for two stints. He was in relief with the Dodgers from 77 to 81. He pitched in the 81 World Series a little bit. And then back in 85, in between, he went to the Twins and he was a starter, and he actually had his best years in Minnesota. He made 57 career starts, 50 of those were with the Twins. With the Dodgers, he had a 91 ERA plus, 389 ERA, almost about 287 innings. All but seven of his games were in relief. So his best season in LA was 1980. He had a 275 ERA, a 129 ERA plus in 98 innings. He led the Dodgers in relief innings and with 60 strikeouts, which, you know, different era. But he also walked 45 because, you know, whatever, different time. He led the Dodgers in saves in 1979. My trivia for you is, how many saves did Bobby Castillo have in 1979 when he led the team?
28.
I will give you a big hint. Not even close, and it's much lower.
13.
You're still high.
9. Clock game. We're playing clock game.
Lower.
8.
Lower?
7.
Yes. So the Dodgers actually saved 34 games that year. Bobby Castillo saved 7. Somebody named Dave Patterson saved 6. Bob Welch, who started 12 games, saved 5. Laron Legros saved 4. Jerry Royce saved 3. How? Like, anyway, Ken Brett, Joe Beckwith, and Terry Forster saved 2. Don Sutton saved 1 in his only non-start. Jerry Hannes and Lance Routson also saved 1. So they spread it around that year. But yeah, I just thought that was kind of funny. And, like, it was a ridiculously low title or total for that. The other sort of fun thing, or not fun, it's just a weird thing. 1981 World Series game 1. Jerry Royce got pulled very early. And Castillo sort of came in to, like, you know, stem the tide a little bit. He came in down in the third, down 4-0, one out. He walked one of the three batters he faced, but nobody scored. And then he came out again for the fourth, Castillo did, and he walked four of his six batters, walking in a run. Amazingly, that's the only run that scored. So, and he was pulled. So his line for the game was one inning, one run, five walks. In World Series history, that's the fewest outs recorded by any pitcher with five walks. The closest to him was five outs by Paul Derringer of the Cubs in Game 7 in 1945. So yeah, that's kind of weird. Bobby Castillo only pitched in three playoff games for the Dodgers. 3.68 ERA. It was like seven innings, but one of them was a long mop-up duty, also in relief of Jerry Royce, who got shelled in 1985 in LCS. So very weird connection those two had. But so the reason I pulled Castillo was because of his baseball cards, and I was looking through, and I have quite a few. I think most of his like Topps cards I have. But the funniest one, or not funny, there's just the set is all weird. It's this, for a series like late 70s, early 80s, the LA Police Department put out baseball cards, and they're like very weird. And they have like some of them have an inspirational message on the back, but it's like framed as a quote from the player. So I'm just going to read you. This is from 1981. The LAPD salutes the 1981 Dodgers, is how they worded the cards, but on the back it says, well, first of all, it's Robert Castillo, he was called in this, even though the other stuff called him Bobby. Robert Castillo asks, does it ever enter your mind to shoplift, to steal? Sure, you may get away with it the first time, maybe the next time too, but sooner or later you're going to get caught and you'll see your whole world fall apart. Don't let shoplifting ruin your life. Give yourself a break and go by the rules. So imagine like getting these cards and you're just, some of them are even, we might have to do an episode later on the rest of them. Cause I haven't gone through all, I have like 4 years of these, so it might be kind of funny. The other thing is 1982 Topps card notes that, he played, it says one of the Dodgers top relievers, Bobby had distinction of playing outfield on September 10th, 1980. I looked at this game. This was the Dodgers were in a pennant race with the Astros. They were up a game on the Astros with about 4 weeks left. This game was in Houston against the Astros. This were expanded rosters, but the Dodgers had used 16 position players already in the game. And so in the 11th inning, Castillo started the inning in right field. And then he and Dusty Baker kept switching off left and right field, and they switched five times in seven batters. So Castillo got no plays out in the field, but Dusty Baker did catch a ball and throw a guy out at the plate, the potential winning run to end the 11th. But the Astros ended up winning that game on a walk-off homer at the end, so that was kind of a fun thing. And then the only other sort of noteworthy thing on the back of his baseball cards was 1981 Topps says, was inspired to pitch by his baseball hero, Sandy Koufax. So like I said, LA guy, born and raised. He ended up dying in Los Angeles too. He worked in the community service department, or like with the Dodgers, did all sorts of community things in LA for like decades after he pitched. So pretty much just a local LA person who dreamed of pitching at Dodger Stadium, and he did. So good for him. He had a nice career.
And now it's time for
Questions for Craig. We love them.
Five questions. Questions. Wow.
We love it. Yeah.
Questions from our friend Craig. The first question, as it has been the last few weeks, is a Simpsons question. For my Simpsons question, tell me your favorite non-Simpson family, duo or group. Examples are Burns and Smithers, Principal Skinner and Superintendent Chalmers, Lenny and Carl, or the bullies, Jimbo, Kearney, Dolph, and Nelson. Principal Skinner and Superintendent Chalmers have had a resurgence in their popularity due to the prevalence of the steamed hams meme,
yeah.
which is nice to see. From one of my favorite episodes, 22 short films about Simpsons. Do you have an answer to this?
If I had to pick, my instinct is probably it might be Skinner and Chalmers only, and not for that episode per se, although that's a great episode and they're great. But I just love the Skinner, like the way it's like, it's just great. I love it.
I was mulling this over, trying to think of like a more hipster answer, but I think it's probably just Burns and Smithers.
Yeah, I mean, they're great.
Like, the just... when the writers, you hear writers get interviewed. Conan did a bit with a old writers' room people, or if you listen to the commentary, when asked who is your favorite character to write for, they almost all unanimously pick Mr. Burns. Because it lets them do old people jokes, and it lets them kind of do evil jokes, which are all really great. And it really comes through, I think, in most of the great Burns moments. So,
the also just like the interplay between them, like Smithers is so like meek, but like also very loyal. But then like they're just the some of the deliveries of the lines are wonderful. Like the when he's asked about donating money when pigs fly, and he's like, will you be donating that money, sir? I'd rather not.
You want me to write check? No. And especially when you realize it's Shearer talking to Shearer.
Oh, right.
So
I forgot about that. Yeah.
And there's I think Conan, again, a really great clip of Shearer doing the interplay with himself. So
that's good.
I believe Eric is a fan of the old game show channel. If you two could be a contestant on any of those shows, Match Game, the $20,000 Pyramid, Pressure Luck, Price is Right, what would it be and why?
So I like the fact that Craig chose $20,000 Pyramid because that game has been, there's so many iterations of that game. Like it always depends on when you're watching because it could be the $64,000 Pyramid. It could be like, you know, the 100th or whatever. But so my favorite television game show was always Press Your Luck. Okay. I've watched The Price is Right more than any game show, I think. I think Jeopardy's probably close to that, maybe. But I think I like Press Your Luck more. And I'm not, like, I'm obviously it would, I don't know what rules we're going by. I'm not saying I would have devoted the time that one gentleman did in like 1985, but I would have been the guy to memorize the board and then like just figure out a way to solve it. Like that, I'm sure had I got on the game, I would have obsessed to it to something of that level, but we'll see. But I think, yeah, Press Your Luck. I loved it. I loved the whammies. They were ridiculous. And, Price is Right a second. I was actually in the audience for Price is Right once in college. I went with my sister and her husband, and we didn't get picked. The people in front of us did get picked. I think I forgot what they won. But my older sister, or my oldest sister, I should say, she was on The Price is Right. I think it was December 1982. I found the video clip of this. I have it somewhere. It's fun. She was like one of the first people picked, and then she won one of the bids, and then I believe she lost her game, and then she won a cedar chest, which I believe she still has to this day. So, yeah, those are the two I would say. But, yeah, Press Your Luck for sure, but close second is Price is Right.
So Price is Right, especially if it was still the Bob Barker era, although Drew Carey does a fine job. Have you seen the documentary on the Perfect Bid documentary?
I haven't. No, I don't think I have. I've read about it a lot, but like I don't think I've seen it.
It's worth your time. It's for sure. It's fascinating. Yeah. On the drama behind the Perfect Bid that happened on The Price is Right. So I want to be a contestant on Jeopardy at some point in my life. But it doesn't quite have the same feel as an old timey game show. If I could be a panelist on the Match Game, that would be fun.
So, yeah, I was going to mention that. I didn't get into Match Game till later, but, man, those shows are fun to watch. Like, those people were, like, well, first of all, most of them were drunk. But, like, it was just
hilarious. At least alcohol going in the system and probably
a variety
of goofballs.
I would say growing up, I watched a lot of game shows on USA after school when I stayed at my grandma's, like, waiting for my mom to get off work. And, there were old episodes of, or I guess Press Your Luck was still running, but like there were like, God, what was it? Sale of the Century was on, like Scrabble was a great
supermarket
TV game show.
Sweep.
Yeah, that was a little later, but I didn't really get into it. But there were also old episodes of Face the Music, which is a weird show. And also Name That Tune. So yeah, I watched a ton of like that old stuff. I was just like, oh, and also Tic-Tac-Doe and Joker's Wild were fun too. So yeah, I was all about the game shows growing up.
You especially, I think, would be good as a panelist on Match Game. It's you're basically just making jokes nonstop.
Oh, for sure.
And you gotta have whatever the hell Brett Summer was having. So he has a follow up to this. If you were on a celebrity partner game show, Password or Pyramid, who would your ideal celebrity partner be?
So if we could bring back someone who's dead, I would say Paul Lynde. Just for his appearances on the Match Game and Hollywood Squares and stuff, he was always funny. If it was today, I would probably say Paul F. Tompkins. Okay. I just know him from his comedy and every podcast. He did a lot of Doug Loves Movies over the years, and he seems pretty competitive. He's done. Jimmy Pardo used to host Match Game at UCB and stuff. He did a lot of that. And he's just generally a great improviser, really funny. I think he would be a fun person to be with.
I think I would have to go with someone of the classic era. So if I'm sticking myself to that, I remember generally being impressed by both Betty White and Nipsey Russell. So
those would be nice.
I think my answers. Mm-hmm. Third question. In 1967, Johnny Roseboro had the lowest total BWAR, 2.7, that led the LA Dodgers for that season. And yes, this includes the two strike seasons. If the Dodgers played, let's say, 100 games this year, name a Dodger position player that will top BWAR. If more than one, please pick your player.
So I didn't look this up or anything, but I have to assume Piazza was certainly above 2.7 in 94, and also Fernando had to be up for his 81 year as well. So this year, I mean, it's really one of two choices. And I think I would pick Mookie Betts, but it's a close one between him and Bellinger.
You write this down because we're going to get more than 100 games somehow. I'll say Bellinger.
Okay. Write it down. So we actually have a bet to consider. I like it. Betts for E, Bellinger for Jay. All right.
While Major League Baseball games might eventually take place, it does seem doubtful any minor league games could take place given the travel and additional expenses. But you would need at least your 40 man and maybe two dozen more players to stay ready. What are your ideas for how teams could do that at the likely spring training sites?
I mean, that's just kind of it. I think we're probably going to end up having some sort of expanded active rosters anyway, but not to the point of 40, but maybe 30 something. Who knows what's going to happen. It's going to be weird. And also you have to account for if people start test positive and they have to get quarantined and be out for 2 weeks or whatever, who knows what's going to happen there. But yeah, so I think it's just that less likely to have minor league games because it's just, you're introducing more elements of gatherings, even though if there's no fans. But I think you just have everyone at the spring training complex basically, and you organize it from there. Keep everyone ready in a reasonable fashion. And I think that's probably the best bet, but it's really a guessing game at this point.
And finally, which of the following fast food, fast casual meals are you most likely to create at home right now? Pizza, burgers, burger and fries, Mexican food, hot wings, or something similar?
I guess Mexican food is probably the quickest or the most likely to. I made carnitas yesterday, and I made homemade salsa over the previously, so that was good. I don't really make pizza at home. That's something I'll buy. I can make a burger today. I actually, to get rid of some of the potatoes I had, I just made potato wedges essentially in the oven. So I guess that's fried. I don't really have fries, I guess. But yeah, Mexican's probably the answer for me.
Burgers for sure. As it's of this list, the one I've actually done, I have been making. We bought a bunch of frozen chicken burger patties, and they've been great. Melissa's having a hard time having red meat while being pregnant, so we've largely stuck to poultry.
Yeah.
But they've been really, really good, and it happens that the way Melissa. We normally buy sweet potatoes, but we got a few regular potatoes just for change things up. And the way she had been making fries is almost exactly reminiscent of In-N-Out fries. So definitely filled a happy void in my heart.
And you can make sure that they're fully cooked through so you don't get garbage fries, which is like the one sort of risk that you take with In-N-Out fries is that they're either really good or terrible. Like there's no one says, you know what, In-N-Out fries are pretty average. Like it's either I want to kill you for bringing them up, or yes, they're so great. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, burgers are great. They're good to have, whether turkey or ground beef or whatever you have. Mm. So I love it.
That's the episode this week. Did you remember what we're doing next week?
No. So I was going to look it up. I didn't look it up.
Okay. So I'm going to do a little teaser. You and I are going to make our major leaguiest rosters of the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember. Yeah, that's a good idea.
We're going to try to, in the spirit of your favorite movie, Major League, we're going to try to construct a Dodgers roster that fits that spirit. And we're going to do that next week.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. And just remember, if you don't like it, cross them off the list.